Continuing the discussion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known in Vishnu Sahasranama and many other scriptures as Bhakta Vatsala, the very kindest, most affectionate, loving, protecting, maintaining, well-wisher of those who are his devotees. In the last talk on this subject, I discussed how Krishna sometimes seems to act in a way which is not kind to his devotees, giving the specific example in relation to the topmost and very dearest devotees, the gopis of Vrindavan, in the topmost and most worshipped and most relishable pastime of the Rasa Leela, Krishna suddenly left the gopis, plunging them into distress. So I discussed that reading from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, with Krishna's explanation, basically, which is that sometimes he leaves his devotees so that their love for him may increase more and more and more. So it's to nourish their love, not to spite them. So this is a point that should be observed. We think of love, or we may think of love, as someone likes me. They always do what I want. This may be the attitude of the child in relation to the parent. Remember, we're talking about Bhakta Vatsala, and the example is given of Krishna being like a parent who acts for the welfare of the children. And the children always think that the parent will act for my welfare. They expect that. And often children can't understand why the parent stops them from doing something that they want to do. There's a bottle with some nice colored liquid inside, which they want to drink, and the parent stops them and scolds them. And the child starts to cry, but it looks so nice, I want to drink it, but it's some poisonous chemical. Or the parent forces the child to go to school. The child doesn't want to go. The child is playing with a kitchen knife, and the parent stops the child from doing that. And the child can't understand, because the child's intelligence concerning his own well-being, concerning everything else, is very limited. The parent's intelligence is better, and therefore the parent acts for the welfare of the child, even against the child's desire, not knowing what's good for himself. So in the same way, devotees have the faith that Krishna, even if Krishna puts us in circumstances which seem to be very distressful, the devotees always feel that, well, Krishna knows what is better for me than I do. Whatever kind of situation he puts me in, let me simply serve him. That's all. Let me maintain my attitude of full trust in him, knowing that he is acting for my benefit. Nija karma guna doshe. J.J. Jamma Pai, Janme Janme Jaina Tava Nama Guna Gai, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, paraphrasing in Bengali the verse, Na Dhanam Na Janam verse of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He states that whatever situation in future births I may attain due to the good or bad activities that I have performed, my only prayer is that in every birth I have the opportunity to sing your name and your glories. This is the attitude of a devotee. Very exalted for us who are here in this material world, thinking in terms of our self-interest in a very minuscule way, in terms of, in an absolutely incorrect way, in terms of this body and this mind. But when we realize, by Bhuta Shuddhi, I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am an eternal spirit soul, and I am an eternal servant of Krishna, sheltered at the lotus feet of Krishna, who is my ever-well-wisher, then I can understand that whatever Krishna does in relation to me is for my benefit. So someone, one person may love another and yet act in a way that does not immediately please that person. This is a deeper level of love than the parent who simply indulges the child. Whatever the child wants, give it. Actually, that's not good parenting. Good parenting is to train and discipline the child. Not that you always have to deny what they want, but train and discipline them to control their senses and to understand what is best for them, and to understand that this world's not such an easy place, that you can't always get what you want. That's the way the world goes, and you have to work for what you want, or you may not get what you want. An example of a parent not giving or acting in a way contrary to what to which the child wanted is in the exhibition of Vatsalya Rasa by Mother Yashoda toward Krishna, when Krishna one time was very happily sucking the milk from her breast. And what can be more indicative or exemplifying the mood of Vatsalya Bhav, the love between a mother and son? The child is sitting on the lap of the mother very peacefully and very happily, taking milk from the breast of the mother. And all of a sudden, Mother Yashoda puts down the child without any warning, and she didn't try to explain to him, you don't explain to a little kid, and runs off. Why? Because she remembered, I left the milk on the stove. I have to attend to it. Maybe it's boiling over by now. And Krishna became very unhappy. Why should a mother do that? I'm very happy. She's very happy. Why? And naturally, of course, a child at that age doesn't start reasoning and trying to work things out. He just blares and cries out. But Mother Yashoda didn't come running back. The child Krishna is crying, but she didn't come. Why did she do that? The milk will boil over. You say, well, the milk will boil over, but isn't it more important to satisfy Krishna? Well, the milk is also for satisfying Krishna. Everything Mother Yashoda does is for satisfying Krishna. So she didn't want the milk. The milk was being boiled to make yogurt and ghee for Krishna, very special milk, the best of Mother Yashoda's milk. So it's all for Krishna. But sometimes you have to do things in different, there's a time, you can't do everything at once. So you can't, even with Krishna, you can't please him in all ways at once. It's like you can't do deity worship and book distribution exactly at the same time. If you're holding the deepam, the ghee lamp in one hand and a bell in the other, and you're supposed to concentrate on the deities, so you can't do book distribution exactly at the same time. They're both for pleasing Krishna, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. So this point is to be... and then, of course, Mother Yashoda, she also tied up Krishna, and Krishna wasn't happy at all. And in all of Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda became a bit ostracized after that. Everyone said, why did you tie him up? And you left him alone, tied up, and then he almost died. When the two trees fell down, it was just by the grace of Narayana that the two trees didn't fall on top of him. And Krishna himself became a little distant from Mother Yashoda, superficially a little distant, as if afraid of her. He didn't want to go near her. Oh, she might tie me up again. And that evening he ran to be with Nanda Baba, not with Yashoda. And everyone was looking at Yashoda. How could she do that? And she only did it for love of Krishna. I have to control him. He has to be a good boy. He has to grow up to be a good boy. I guess Mother Yashoda wasn't a very good parent because he didn't grow up to be a very good boy. He wasn't a very good. Just shortly after that, he'd be dancing with all the gopis at night. Krishna's not a very good boy. Ram's a very good boy. The same Supreme Lord, another form of. But even Ram, he went to the forest. And in this way, he pleased who? Kaikeyi only. And everyone else he displeased. He displeased even his father who'd ordered him to go to the forest. All the inhabitants of Ayodhya, he displeased all of them. They wanted to go to the forest with him. He said, no, you go back. He displeased them again. Well, he pleased the demigods. And he pleased us. All of us who are aspiring or who actually are his devotees, even so many eons later, we can hear about his glorious pastimes. If Ram had just sat at home and been a king, where's the fun? Where's the pastime? Where's the glory? Where's the majesty? Where are the great exploits of Lord Ram? Where is the killing of Ravana for the pleasure of the demigods? We find in Srimad Bhagavatam and so many other Puranas lists of kings, including the lists of kings that come down all the way there, coming down through from the sun god. The list of kings that come down to Dasharatha and then Ram. The list is there. Many of the names, there's just the name, because just the name is given and their activities are not given. Why? Because they lived peaceful, relatively peacefully. And Ayodhya, the kingdom that cannot be, that is unassailable by warriors. So they ruled their kingdom very well. They followed all the laws of Dharma. They were all very great devotees. And there's nothing that much to say about them. If we see their lives of so many devotees, very good devotees. But there's not that much to say about them because they did what devotees do. They worshipped Krishna. They chanted Hare Krishna. They were ideal devotees. But then if you find the life of Srila Prabhupada, there's so much to say about him because he went out into the world. He faced so many difficulties. He preached. He made so many devotees. There's thousands of pages written about Srila Prabhupada. And with no disrespect to his godbrothers, there's not so much nearly written about them because they didn't do the great devotees, no doubt, but they didn't do things on the grand scale that Srila Prabhupada did. So similarly, Lord Rama, apparently, he made all his devotees unhappy by leaving Ayodhya. From the very beginning, when the order came to leave from his father, Kaikeyi, via his father, Lakshman was immediately there, forget all this, you know, I'll with my own sword, with my own hands, I'll just forget all this. I'll see that you're crowned, and Dasharath, if necessary, I'll just kill him. I'll kill Kaikeyi and Lakshman. He's ready to serve Ram by killing Dasharath, which wouldn't have pleased Ram, of course. But what? So many good arguments were given to Rama by all the citizens, especially by all the Brahmins, by the family guru, Vasishtha, and Ram counted them all. He said, nope. It's not that he was just stubborn, but he gave arguments on the basis of Shastra, specifically on the basis of Dharma, that they couldn't counter. They could see, actually, what he's doing is right. He should go. He could have accepted their pleas, and that would have made them happy. But instead, he went to the forest. So what's the point here? What's the point I'm making? That Rama is bhaktavatsa, he's very kind to his devotees. But by leaving, we're talking about Krishna leaving the Rasa Leela for some minutes. Of course, the Rasa Leela is the night of Brahma in duration. But Rama, he left for a full 14 years. And made the citizens very unhappy. But actually their love for him never wavered, and he was always in their thoughts. So in Krishna consciousness or Rama consciousness, even if the devotee feels unhappy, he feels happy simply remembering the Lord, living in hope, 14 years, how many days to go? Waiting, 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 waiting. Slowly, slowly, all the days go past. Then much is made of Rama's banishing Sita when she was pregnant. That's a horrible thing to do. Oh, why did Lord Ram do it? Of course, the reasons are given there. His Maryada Purushottam, his avatar is especially for establishing the principles of Dharma. If Lord Ram hadn't acted exactly in accord with the principles of Dharma, then others would have taken advantage to have made an excuse for, well, Rama didn't follow strictly, so I can make an excuse also. So for the benefit of the world, Lord Rama acted like that. Very difficult to understand, unless we see the big picture. It's very difficult. People often complain about this, especially feminists. They say, oh, Rama mistreated Sita, feminist argument, and feminism in general, the idea that women are equal to men and there are scientific studies which show they're equal. Actually, they're plenty of scientific studies which show, and you don't need a scientific study. After all, men and women are different, so you can't say they're equal in all respects. But it's very difficult for people who are raised with the idea that women and men, they're all the same, and why in Vedic culture they're not given the same rights. But in Vedic culture, the idea of rights and freedom, it's not something which is stressed as in the Western world. It's a completely different conception of civilization and how we should live. What is the goal of life? It's not defined in the modern Western civilization, but more or less it is. Western means it's everywhere now. But generally the idea is that to maximize everyone's happiness in terms of sense gratification, ability to get money and enjoy yourself, which is animalistic. It's not on a high platform. Whereas Vedic culture begins with the understanding that we are not the body. We get different bodies according to our karma, male bodies, female bodies, human bodies, non-human bodies. And we are stuck in the cycle of birth and death due to attachment to the various bodies that we have, and due to cultivating the desire for enjoyment in this material world. Therefore, we should understand our true spiritual situation in relationship with Krishna and act in such a way that we can become free from material attachments and become totally attached to Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead. That's the ultimate purpose of Vedic civilization. So in the very core is different, the very core understand. People are called men, their spirit souls who are born in the body of a man due to their past karmic activities. And what we call women are born in a certain body, a woman's body, due to their previous karma, their previous activities. And so the understanding is we have to accept the position we're in, this psychophysical situation that we're in, work with that to become purified in consciousness. Not that we try to defy the psychophysical limitations, the parameters that are imposed upon us due to our previous karmic activities. So it's a completely different understanding, completely different approach. And it is going to be hard for many people to understand why Ram banished Sita. It seemed like a very cruel thing to do. And in one sense, you can say, yeah, it is cruel. Fate is cruel. And even the way people are obliged to act can be very cruel. Up to the present day, the heads of governments, they're overseeing the punishment of criminals and maybe the elimination of political enemies. That's life in the big world. The people may protest about that, but it's part of statesmanship. It's not for nice guys. You can't just be a nice guy. Ram is the most ideal nice guy. But he had to kill so many. He killed so many demons. The relatives of the demons weren't happy with that. He caused so much distress. But he caused distress to the people who were sinful to give pleasure. Not just pleasure, but to give the opportunity for further spiritual advancement to the people who were good. So it's all part of his bhakta-vatsalya. If we say bhakta-vatsalya, we could say maybe abhakta-avatsalya. He doesn't act in a way which is pleasing to the non-devotees, but actually he does act for their benefit, sometimes by punishing them. So all these things are very subtle. Has to be understood at a deeper level than simply saying, oh, that's very bad. No, that's not good. trying to understand the activities of Lord Krishna and Lord Rama through the lens of our materialistic judgment based on ideas that we have picked up from the culture that we're raised in. And the culture we're raised in, it's just like at the present time, the Western civilization, they think, oh, we're very moral, we're very better than others, we're very good, we want to give equal rights to others all over the world. But it's, if you look at their so-called civilization, it's a mess. People aren't happy, and they talk a lot about equitable dealings, but practically speaking, it's not a there are so many discrepancies. I don't want to get into a complete rundown of Western civilization here, but it is very hypocritical that they take the high ground, the moral high ground, and they want to lecture to others about upholding human rights, when they themselves violate human rights left, right, and center all the time. But when somehow or other, when they do it, it's okay. So to judge the Vedic culture through the lens of a highly flawed and highly hypocritical Western cultural lens. I mean, of course, it's not that everyone in the West thinks in the same way. I'm just speaking very generally here. But anyway, the point is, God is good. Krishna is good. Ram is good. All good. Even if sometimes to our limited understanding, it appears that they're not being very good. Of course, Rama, he's very good. Basically, he's very good. He acts very righteously all the time. Even when it sometimes appears, he doesn't act righteously. But that's a special feature of Lord Ram. He's very, very good. Whereas Krishna doesn't bother about being good. It's Krishna, just like Rama is exemplifying dharma. And Krishna is not just exemplifying the principle of prema, but Krishna is all love, all loving. For Krishna, prema is the most important thing. His love, his overwhelming love for all living beings, and especially for his devotees, and especially for the residents of Vrindavan. And Krishna's love for them, because he's the Supreme Lord, he can do whatever he likes, then he acts in ways which appear to transgress worldly dharma, but he's not within the ambit of worldly dharma. If we say, well, Krishna, he's done very wrong, but God does no wrong. Everything he does is for the pleasure of his devotees, and he appears to do so many bad things. Oh, he's very bad, Krishna. He's cheating, lying, stealing, killing his elders, annoying babies when he's a little baby himself, dancing with others' wives. But especially in his childhood, his naughtiness endears him to his parents and the other elders, the people of that age. Even Rama is a very well-behaved child, but Krishna invokes love more than does Rama by being a very naughty child. It can be very frustrating that you're trying to protect all your butter and your ghee and your yogurt, and Krishna somehow or other finds some way to steal it. And it's just, oh no. We thought everything was safe, and then we came, and then all of a sudden the storeroom is broken into, all the milk pots are upset, it's just a complete mess. And oh, must have been Krishna again. So they've become very frustrated, but it's bliss for the residents of Vrindavan. Rama's devotees, they'll protest, no, no, Rama is much better. They can't understand Krishna. If they could, they'd surrender to him. But they're devotees of Rama. They have their own taste in serving Krishna. Now, this does sound a little wrong here, right? Doesn't it? Krishna does. We're trying to justify Krishna doing so many wrong things, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond all mundane qualities. I'm going to quote from Vishnu Yamala, as stated in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The 18 faults of materialistically contaminated living beings. The 18 faults are bewilderment, sleep, error, material attachment without prema, to be attached to someone without pure love. Material lust, which brings suffering. Fickleness, intoxication, envy, violence, exhaustion. Hard labor, toil, lying, anger, hankering, worry, absorption in worldly affairs, prejudice, and dependence on others. Now, you may say, well, we find some of these things in the character of Krishna. And both Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakra Thakur, in their commentaries on Rupa Goswami's most glorious Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, have said that the Supreme Lord exhibits some of these defects, or apparent defects, because when the Supreme Lord has defects, they're not defects. So the Supreme Lord exhibits these defects. Why? Out of affection for those devotees who purely love him. In other words, Krishna's apparently wrong behavior is just another, in every instance, it's an exhibition of, or another way to show love to his devotees. So Krishna's faults are virtues, the faults of conditioned souls are faults. When Krishna behaves in a similar way to the faulty behavior of conditioned souls, it is absolutely a virtue, because God is absolute and everything he does is for the pleasure of his devotees. Now, in the commentary of Srila Jiva Goswami on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he gives some examples of how what would be considered a bad quality in a conditioned soul is a great virtue in Krishna, because it brings out more and more and more and more and more of his love for his devotees. The first one mentioned is moha, bewilderment, illusion. And Jiva Goswami quotes here from Bhagavatam, Tato vatsana drisht vaitya puline picha vatsapan ubhavapi vane krishno vichikaya samantataha. This is in relation to the pastime in which Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boyfriends of Krishna. So Krishna, he went off looking for the calves. He told his cowherd boyfriends, out of love for them, his bhaktavatsalya, he told them, we're all taking our meal here. The calves have wandered off, but you don't disturb your meal. I'll go and get the calves. You happily take your meal. So Krishna went to look for the calves, couldn't find them because Brahma had stolen them. And then he came back, and the cowherd boys were gone too. And this verse, I'm giving a translation. Thereafter, when Krishna was unable to find the calves, he returned to the bank of the river. But there he was also unable to see the cowherd boys. Then, thus he began to search for both the calves and the boys, as if he could not understand what had happened. Krishna's looking, what happened? Where have they gone? He's bewildered. So, out of his love for his devotees, he can't see them. They're gone. He's as if bewildered. He doesn't know what's going on. Sleep, exhaustion, and toil, very hard work, are illustrated in another verse from the Bhagavatam in Krishna's childhood pastimes. Sleep in a conditioned soul is a symptom of ignorance and being under the control of material nature. Exhaustion, these are the conditions of material life. Hard work, labor, these are all parts of the miseries of material life. But Krishna also exhibits them, as we'll hear in this verse. Kvachit pallava talpe shunni yuddha shramakarshitaha rikshamulashrayashe te gopot sango pabarhanaha. Sometimes Krishna grew tired from fighting and lay down at the base of a tree, resting upon a bed made of soft twigs and buds and using the lap of a cowherd friend as his pillow. So Krishna, hard work, it's very hard work, fighting with the cowherd boys and looking after the cows. So becoming exhausted, Krishna lies down and goes to sleep. How beautiful to hear about Krishna. These are not signs of material incapability. They are signs of how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees as if he's an ordinary person. If Krishna is always God, how are you going to have love with him if he's always God? I'm God. He appears to be human-like. And in this way, he reciprocates with his devotees out of his pure love for them, reciprocating with their pure love for him. Brahm, acting as if they making mistakes, making errors, is described in the following charming verse about Krishna and Balaram, how they are mistaken. Tavangri yogmam anukrishya sarish ripantau ghosha pragosha ruchirang rajakara dameshu tannada hrishta manasava nusritya lokam mugda prabhitavad upeyatur anti matroho. When Krishna and Balaram, with the strength of their legs, crawled in the muddy places created in Raja by cow dung and cow urine, their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents, and the sound of their ankle bells was very charming. Very much pleased by the sound of other people's ankles bells, they used to follow these people as if they were going to their mothers. But when they saw that these were other people, they became afraid and returned to their real mothers, Yashoda and Rohini. So what's going on here? Krishna and Balaram, little boys, they're playing in the mud, which is made from the cow urine and cow dung mixing with the earth of Vrindavan. That's described. Now, in Vedic culture, men and women wear ankle bells, especially women used to until very recently. It's a very common thing. It's another sign of the degradation of Indian culture that women don't do these things now. They're the same culture that's been going on since time immemorial. They don't do it now because they've become modern and advanced. There's so many things they've dropped. So sometimes Krishna and Balaram, when they're playing like this, they'd hear tinkle, 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 and they think it's our mothers. And they'd follow the sound because they're little boys, right? They're just little boys. So they follow, but then they see, oh, it's not my mother. Oh, and they become very afraid because at that age, they only trust their own parents. They become very afraid and run back to their own mother. So they made a mistake. Very charming to hear. And their mothers and the people who they ran after, they're all become charmed. And we also become charmed by seeing these pastimes of Krishna, who enacts these pastimes out of his bhakta vatsalya, out of his love for his devotees, to increase their love for him. Of course, Krishna is not sitting around, or when he's performing the pastimes, he's not exactly thinking like that. I'm going to do this to make their love increase. It's all arranged by his lila shakti, his potency, for organizing his pastimes. In Krishna's mind, he is bewildered. He makes mistakes. He doesn't know what's going on. This is a very highest level of God consciousness to even begin to understand this. Attachment without love is a fault. That's not there in the spiritual world, because Krishna is very attached to his devotees and they're very attached to him on the basis of love. But material lust springs from perverted desire. Yeah, it is perverted desire, and it brings grief, but it doesn't exist in the spiritual world. So among these 18 faults, it's not that all are exhibited in the spiritual world. Fickleness becomes a good quality. That means, let's hear about it. Misbehavior, naughty behavior of child Krishna. Vatsan munchan kvajit asamaye krosha sanjatahasa. Stayang svadyatyata dadipaya kalpitai steya yogai. Marakan bhokshyan vipajati sachinati bhandam pinati. Dravyalabhe sagriha kupito yat yupakrosha tokan. The friends of Mother Yashoda, in the village, her more or less the same age, the mothers of the children, they come to complain to her about Krishna. Our dear friend Yashoda, your son sometimes comes to our houses before the milking of the cows and release the calves, which means that the calves go and drink all the milk. Of course, the cows of Vrindavan, they have a lot of milk, and practically unlimited. And when the master of the house becomes angry, your son merely smiles. Sometimes he devises some process by which he steals palatable curd, butter, and milk, which he then eats and drinks. When the monkeys assemble, he divides it with them, and when the monkeys have their bellies so full that they won't take more, he breaks the pots. I mean, that's really bad, isn't it? And then with great endeavor, taking out the cows, looking after the cows very nicely, milking them, taking the milk, putting it in pots, making yogurt, and then this little boy, fulfilling no good purpose, comes and distributes it to the monkeys. Distributing to the monkeys means fulfilling no good purpose. And when the monkeys are full and won't take more, and there's still some left, then he's such a rascal, he breaks the pot, so that all the rest is completely useless and gone. So Bhaktavatsala, he's feeding his monkey friends. he's pleasing the monkey devotees, but displeasing the human devotees. Going on with the translation. Sometimes if he gets no opportunity to steal butter or milk from a house, sometimes the householders are so smart that they outsmart Krishna, and Krishna is very expert at doing his crimes. He breaks all the security systems, gets through, steals the butter and yogurt, but sometimes the householders, they set up security in such a way that Krishna can't do it. They outsmart him, and then if Krishna gets no opportunity to steal butter or milk from a house, he will be angry at the householders, and for his revenge, he will agitate the small children by pinching them. He'll go up to, so I can't steal your butter, so he'll go up to the little children smaller than him and pinch them, so make them cry. Then when the children begin crying, Krishna will go away. See, I'll show you. I'm going to do something you don't like, one way or the other. I'm going to do something you don't like. So this is bad behavior on the part of a little boy. What's he going to, if he's like this as a kid, what's he going to be like when he grows up? Ah, darling Krishna. In this way, Krishna increases the absorption in loving thought of him by his devotees. Mother, intoxication, that can't be good. That can't be good, intoxication. Intoxication isn't good. Here's a description of Krishna being intoxicated. The word mada means intoxication. It's the first word of this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. Mada vigurnita lochanishat manada svasu hridang vanamali badara pandu vadano mridugandam mandayan kanaka kundala lakshmya. As Krishna respectfully greets his well-wishing friends, his eyes roll slightly. In the translation it said, as if from intoxication. But the original Sanskrit says, his eyes roll from intoxication. Krishna is intoxicated with love. So this is very nice, his love for his devotees. He wears a flower garland and the beauty of his soft cheeks is accentuated by the brilliance of his golden earrings and the whiteness of his face, which has the color of a badara berry. Now, we often hear about how the six famous bad qualities can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Kam, krodh, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. That's lust, anger, greed, kam, krodh, lobha, illusion. Mada here, mada means pride, and matsarya, envy. But we often hear envy can't be used in Krishna's service, so we don't expect envy in the personality of Godhead. Here's an example of Krishna's enviousness, the worst possible quality, but in Krishna, it is laudable. And in Krishna, it simply increases the love of his devotees. This is quoted by Srila Jiva Goswami in his commentary showing how bad qualities become good qualities, or in Krishna, or what might be considered bad qualities become good qualities in Krishna, because it's all done for the pleasure of his devotees, because he's Bhakta Vatsala. Again, from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, Tatra prativithing samyag atma yogena sadhye lokesha maninang mudhyad dhanishye shri madang tamaha. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. So Krishna's become very angry at Indra, and he's acting as if he's envious toward Indra. He wants to chastise Indra. That is for the benefit of Indra, and much more so for the benefit of his devotees. He wants to protect his devotees because he is Bhakta Vatsala. Jiva Goswami says, as far as violence is concerned, which is basically a bad quality in the material world, there are many clear examples of violence, so he doesn't give any, because Krishna is violent so often. For the pleasure, it's all for increasing the pleasure of his devotees. In fact, the whole Bhagavad Gita unfolds with Krishna convincing the pacifist Arjuna to, again, take up his role as a warrior, a fighter. Lying, deception. That's very bad, isn't it? When someone cheats you, they're lying, deceiving. In the material world, it's very bad. Here's an example of how Krishna, with Bhima and Arjuna, deceived Jarasandha. Nahang bhakshitavanam bhat sarve mityabhi shang sinaha yadi satya girastarhi samaksham pasha me mukham. this Bhima and Arjuna with Krishna went to Jarasandha's capital. But a verse is given here, another example from Krishna's Vrindavan Leela of him lying when he's accused of eating dirt. And he says to his mother, "My dear mother, I have never eaten dirt." Lying! He's a liar! All my friends complaining against me are liars. He said, "I'm not lying, they're lying." But by saying that, he again commits a lie. If you think they're being truthful, you can directly look into my mouth and examine it. And there Yashoda found the evidence. Krishna's been eating dirt, a lot of dirt, all the dirt in the universe. Not only the dirt, not only the earth, but all the fire, earth, water, fire, air, ether. He ate everything in the whole universe. It's all within his mouth. So Krishna was lying when I don't have any earth in my mouth. The whole earth is in his mouth. Examples of anger are also well known. That goes with violence. There's non-angry violence, non-existence. Hankering, akanksha, is very bad in the material world. A strong desire to get something. But here's an example of Krishna's strong desire. Can't control his senses. Tang stanya kama asadya matnantim jananim harihi. Grihitva dadhi mantanam niyashedhat preeting avahan. While Mother Yashoda was churning butter, Lord Krishna, desiring to drink the milk of her breast, appeared before her, and in order to increase her transcendental pleasure, Bhaktavatsala, he caught hold of the churning rod and began to prevent her from churning. So she's churning, and Krishna gets a hold of the churning rod and says, no, you feed me milk from your breast. Stops her from doing it. Worry is another materialistic quality. Worry. God, he doesn't worry. Why should God worry? He's got everything under control. But he worries. Here's an example. Kvapya drishtvantar vipine vatsan palangs cha vishvavid sarvang vidhi kritang krishna sahasa vajagamaha. When Krishna was unable to find the calves and their caretakers, the cowherd boys, anywhere in the forest, he was very worried. Can you imagine? You lose something, become very worried. What happened? Did I lose? Can't find the keys to my car. Where did I put them? Did I leave them in the car? Where did I drop them somewhere? Become very worried that I can't get to work. But then Krishna suddenly understood that this is the work of Lord Brahma. Then again became worried. And what are we going to do now? Absorption in worldly affairs, Vishva Vibrama. Absolutely materialistic quality. In Krishna, very good. In a materialist, very bad. Is shown in Krishna's desire to maintain the universe. He maintains the universe. He does so with relation to his devotees, the demigods such as Brahma. So the universe is a playground for him to perform his pastimes, to please the devotees. Bhaktavatsala. Prejudice, Vishamadvam, is illustrated as follows. Samohang sarvabhuteshu name dveshu stina priyaha. Yebajanti tumang bhakta maite teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, Krishna says, nor am I partial to anyone. See, I'm God. I envy no one. I'm not partial to anyone. I'm equal to all. God, yes, this is God, equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. I'm God, I'm equal to all. But I'm God and I can do what I like and I'm partial to my devotees. Partiality. dependency on others. It means you're not liberated, right? If we're dependent on others, how can the Supreme Lord be dependent upon others? But he directly states, Ahang bhakta paradhino hiya svatantra iva dvija sadhu bir grasta hridayo bhaktair bhakta jana priyaha. I am completely under the control of my devotees. God is completely under the control of his devotees. Why? To increase their love for him. This is the point that Jiva Goswami is bringing out in giving all these examples. Indeed, Lord Vishnu says, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit within the cause of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me. So, we should have faith that Krishna is looking after us. Krishna loves. If Krishna, he says, Bhaktaya Bhaktajana Priyaha. Krishna, we're hearing about all these pastimes. We may wonder, oh, so far off, so distant. How can I even begin to approach Krishna? But the clue is there. Let us become the devotee of his devotees and know that Krishna will help us. If we try to become the devotee of his devotee, then Krishna will help us because he is Bhakta Vatsala and he is wants to please his devotees. So if somehow we can please his devotees, then we can't become Bhakta Vatsala. He pleases from a higher platform. But we can please from a lower platform. So if we please his devotee, then Krishna becomes very pleased to shower his mercy down on us and accept us also as his devotees. So I'll now wind up this discussion for today about Bhakta Vatsala. There's much, much more to be said about this. And we'll look forward to discussing this most glorious glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in another session. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo Namaha. Dante nithaya churnakang padayani patya kritvacha kakushatameta daham bravimi. He sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad goranga chanda charne kurutanu raga. Parivadatu jano yata tatava nanu mokarona vayam vichara yamaha. Hari rasa madira madati matta bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.